Welcome to the Outthinker Podcast. Each week, we talk with forward-looking strategists and innovators that are challenging the status quo, leading the future of business, and shaping our world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of the Outthinker Strategy Network.
What's the future of data? A lot of people say data will be the new oil. What's your view?
We are having debates about this. I actually believe data is more likely to be the new water.
That was Miklos Dietz, a senior partner at McKinsey & Company, where he leads McKinsey's banking strategy and innovation work globally and is the managing partner of the Vancouver office. Miklos's specialty is in helping financial service companies and other organizations harness digital technologies and stay ahead of emerging trends. He's the author of The Ecosystem Economy, How to Lead in the New Age of Sectors Without Borders. And let me just say, it is one of the most compelling and practical books I've read on this shift strategists have been tracking now for a decade of the erasing of barriers and growing cross-sector competition. He's the founder and chair of the Panorama Research Group and the Ecosystem Hub and has served over 450 clients in over 40 countries across multiple industries. Prior joining McKinsey, he worked at Merrill Lynch and Reuters. An interesting side fact, if you will, about him is that he was awarded the Knight's Cross Order of Merit of the Republic of Hungary in 2008 for supporting the government during the global financial crisis. In this podcast, he will share why now. I mean, we've been talking about this erosion of industry boundaries for years now, but Miklos offers the economic and technological reasons for why we are about to step into a new era of ecosystem-based competition. He gives us a picture of what this future would look like when the 88 sectors of the global economy reconfigure into a smaller number of ecosystems, like when education combines with labor markets to form a talent ecosystem. We'll have a health ecosystem, travel, home, and other ecosystems. And he offers some very specific strategic exercises and steps you can act on right now to position your organization to thrive in the emerging ecosystem economy. Ladies and gentlemen, Miklos Dietz. Miklos, thank you so much for being here with us. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a true honor.
So we have been talking about this podcast and with our members, this idea of whatever is not an industry or sector, but rather an ecosystem or arena or whatever that is. I'm really thrilled to dig into the research that you've done. But to start us off, just to get us to know you a little bit personally, could you complete this sentence for me? If you really know me, you know that.
You know that I'm absolutely passionate about history and the world, every little minutia detail about every country. I come from a very small country, hence the terrible accent, but I have this infatigable thirst to understand more and more.
Which country do you come from?
Hungary.
Hungary, yep. And what period in history? Is it like ancient history or modern history? Or
all of these. I spend unlimited amount of time trying to understand. And it is also because I do believe that there are patterns which are repeating. And I really especially love large-scale, multi-continental, multi-cycle trends because I believe it's very interesting, but they are also actually useful.
Yeah, and I'm sure that that has informed your observation of this shift that we're experiencing now.
Well, it helped that I lived behind the Iron Curtain. I lived under a communist regime, and I have seen it opening, and I have seen it going at left and right, and right at the most influential time of my life, you know, 16 to 18, I have seen everything going really well, and then really wrong, and really well again. And it puts you into very specific perspective, and you realize that macro matters, global megatrend matters, and we sometimes forget about that.
Yes, and to appreciate that at that visceral imprint that only experiencing it probably gives you is beyond the kind of intellectual appreciation of the impact of macro. Second question, again, I ask all of our guests this and always get a different answer. What's your definition of strategy?
My definition of strategy is the art to know what not to do, or to define it a bit more professionally, is to make long-term choices in resource-constrained environments.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So then what got you interested? Because you get to work in strategy. That's your career now. What got you interested in strategy?
At its very heart, it goes back to my absolute fascination of history and geopolitics. But then there was an extra layer. When I started to work in business, I realized how strategy is this type of frequently soft topic. And I'm a data geek. I'm a numbers guy. And I just felt that there must be a way to introduce a more fundamental quantitative structured thinking into strategy when those choices can be made, right? When you somehow find the magical balance between not losing the art, but bringing in the science.
Got it. Great.
What I really appreciate about your recent work is that while we've heard other thought leaders talk about, warn about, predict, and I've even written in some of my books this idea of this blurring of industry boundaries and things, what I really appreciate is that you took the scientific data supported argument, and I'd love to hear why that is, that if we are shifting from sectors to ecosystems, what is the economic argument for why that now, or the technological argument for why now?
Wow, great question. So to start with, my argument would be, or our argument with Venkat, my co-author, is sectors did not evolve around customer needs. We have had industry sectors since the beginning of organized labor, which is around 7,000, 8,000 BC, Mediterranean, and they have always structured around the needs, supply needs, distribution needs, unique knowledge and know-how of sectors. The world has never been organized across the customer. It was always organized across supply because, let's face it, supply was constrained. And there are very good reasons for that. Each industry sector required its own part of how to make things, whether you were speaking about weapons smiths or armor smiths in the past, and each of these has its own distribution. Sometimes sectors have merged with the emergence of factory, or let's say even supermarkets merge different type of distribution models into one. But it usually happens through generations and generations. Now, what we are arguing is now we are in an entirely unique point of human history, which will lead to the largest economic transformation of the history of the planet. And the reason behind this is simply that technology now breaks down these barriers somewhat systematically. Unique distribution. 50 years ago, banks had their branches, insurance had their brokers or agents. Each company, you know, you had to buy a mobile phone at the mobile phone store. Now you get everything from your smartphone. One barrier gone. Unique data, each sector, you know, again, to give you examples, how to make cars, generations of compiled knowledge and know-how, plus unique data on customers, banks basically exist for thousands of years on the sheer ability to forecast better which lender will fail or which not. All these data advantages now also gone. With the emergence of big data, you can replicate all the unique data and even know-how of traditional supply chains. Unique resources are all gone. With very efficient marketplaces now, you can start a company quickly. Unique systems, sectors, cloud-based computing, and just the radical cost of computing going down. Right now, you can start a company which can replicate end-to-end value chains, whole systems, frequently at marginal cost, not even at fixed cost, but even if at fixed cost, it's a very low fit. Just one factoid, in the last decade, the average cost of a startup went down by a whopping 80% because of that. So suddenly, all the things which kept sectors isolated for each other went down. Now, I would argue this is amazing. This is the best thing ever happened to customers. This technology, this enabled a different type of serving very fundamental customer needs. And the moment the first inkling of this came, customers jumped on it in the billions. Obviously, it started in certain markets where leapfrogging was easier than in others, right? But by now, almost everywhere you look, people want and love to consume services in a cross-sectoral matter. They don't care about, oh, these sectors historically existed. All they care about is what are their fundamental needs. To give you one example, nobody wants a mortgage. That's not a human need. Human need is shelter or home. Historically, we have been serving people in an extremely fragmented way. Real estate agents, mortgage broker, you have a bank, you have an insurance company, a moving company. The moment somebody provides end-to-end services across the whole journey, hey, in reality, all you need is a home. Why don't I guide you into a journey when you can find your home, move in, get it financed, live there, maybe even sell it, renovate it all the time in one environment? It is just a vastly more comfortable solution for people. Now, this is not yet happening in the home journey, but if you look at, for example, digital media, this is kind of like what has happened. So I remember we used to have backlits and then we used to have CD. Suddenly, now we have players like Spotify or Netflix or TikTok cutting across the whole value chain. Digital media, and obviously it moves first because it has the youngest customer. Traditionally, there were separate studios. Traditionally, there were separate distributors. Traditionally, you actually got your VHS from Blockbuster. And now we have end-to-end platforms cutting across historically existing industries. And customers not just love it, they can't live without it. The speed of this transformations compared to other industrial transformations is shocking. It is almost like a millennia-old customer needs finally satisfied.
Digging into one point, you talk about technology, data, supply, cost of computing, et cetera. Under the data, I heard you say something I think is really interesting. What's the future of data? A lot of people say data will be the new oil. What's your view?
We are having debates about this. I actually believe data is more likely to be the new water.
Huh, what do you mean?
I mean, this is a very fair debate, and we actually have looked into this at depth. Oil is a finite resource. Whoever owns it gets the economic rent. Water is an incredibly important resource, which, however, constantly recycles because you use it, right? By water in obvious cycles, it's very heavily regulated. Water utilities essentially provide water in a very uniform way to everyone, ideally when it's well managed. Don't look at the Colorado River. And it becomes like a uniform resource in a very structured way. We believe that there is a constant dynamic between new oil and new water. But if you ask me, I think there are strong forces which are pushing data more towards the water units. If you look at regulatory changes in Europe, regulatory changes in China. If you look at customer behavior, customers, they want to have some control over data. Every privacy change have an effect here. And I would argue probably haven't seen truly major cyber events yet. But when they happen, that will just further reinforce this trend. So I think it's almost like in the interest of global economy, we will probably have a regulated utility like data world. But again, I don't think the outcome will be one extreme or another. I just think that oil is maybe just too simple describing the future.
Yes. I love that you, especially in this book, it's so easy with these kinds of topics to fully sway one way or the other and just have an opinion that is provocative and your opinions, predictions, explanations are really grounded. Just talk to me, how many sectors are there now? And if sectors reconfigure into ecosystems, what would be an example of one of those ecosystems?
So there are different definitions of sectors. In some way, there are hundreds of sectors globally. What we are arguing is that not the whole economy, but only the distribution part of the economy will transform. However, that's around 50-60% of the GDP and 70% of revenues globally. That has around 88 sectors in a kind of a traditional definitions. But again, these are somewhat artificial definitions, but they exist definitely in the mind of strategy people when they're calculating their market shares. And we believe that with digitalization, a part of the economy, around a third to half of the distribution economy will reshape. Sectors will not disappear, but a very large part of new value creation will happen cross-sectorally. By the way, we believe that, but if you look at the stock markets and look at the market cap of the largest companies, probably the investors believe it too. And what we are arguing is that 88 sector will be replaced by a 12 large ecosystem, B2C and B2B, which are collapsing around the very fundamental human needs or organizational needs in the case of businesses. To give you a business example, we believe that if you really go into the future, small businesses will have one integrated gateway through which they get banking, telecom, administrative services, payment solution, healthcare management, data management, even some software in one simple way. We believe that there will probably be a large-scale input ecosystem which will merge all the suppliers into enormous, constantly evolving marketplaces. We believe that a large part of very, very different healthcare-related topics merge into one health and wellness ecosystem, part of it regulated, part of it not, part of it more like care, the other part is more wellness. We believe that education, but at the same time also, for example, the labor market will turn into a talent ecosystem where you will have service providers who are guiding you from which schools to choose, what knowledge to provide, increasingly outside of school, increasingly more via computer games or podcasts. But then it will also integratively connect to a labor market, which will be far more flexible, less full-time employment, lots of partial time increments, and you will literally manage your whole talent career through ecosystems. Now, very importantly, we are not arguing that these are like unique, uniform blocks. There are overlaps between them. And we are also not arguing that it will take over the whole universe. But we believe that ecosystems will influence even very traditional choices. Even if you go to a hairdresser or to your local store, you may use those coupons, vouchers, digital apps, which then give you rewards, which then connect into this more broad end-to-end ecosystems.
I love it. Yes. Yeah. Peter Drucker famously said that strategy is the answer to the question of what business are you in. And what I'm kind of thinking is we need to move away from we are in hospital management to we are in health and wellness. And then that expands our activities, our competitive set, the rest. I've got so many questions. I know we're reaching the top of our time with you. So I'm going to pick one that I think is maybe more actionable. Let's say a company realizes that it needs to start building the capabilities or mindsets to start operating in this broader ecosystem instead of thinking of itself as in the sector. What do they do? Does an insurance company then just go hire some healthcare people, or what do we do?
Oh, this is a great question. By the way, first and foremost, hats off to companies. Most companies I'm speaking now, we started to work on it around 12 years ago. Over the last 12 years, I would argue most management teams and boards have awakened to this to an extent. I would say the first thing they need to do, and you were so spot on with the quote, first, make sure you define where you are actually playing. What is the fundamental customer need you are serving? Again, as an insurance company, insurance is a tiny little element in a customer journey, whether it's a travel or a healthcare or life. Are you really sure you really understand the actual customer need? If you are home insurance, you understand what exactly is the universe and who are you competing against? Insurance companies may end up competing against banks, against real estate developers, against tech platforms. Define where you play today, where you want to play. What are these customer needs you are serving? Once you have defined that, try to find, okay, in this universe, in 10, 15 years time, because you need to have a bit of a long horizon, even if the actions are practical. What is the way to create value, truly future-proof value in the long run? Probably not just doing insurance, probably capture more of the journey. Insurance companies, by the way, have been spectacularly successful from being on to discovery in reinventing these value propositions. So you define the type of value chains you want to work in and the type of business models. And then comes reality. Okay, that's a great vision. But in reality, what you can do is you can start to build businesses. So yes, to your question, should you hire a couple of healthcare people? Yes, I would argue that most health insurance companies already have that. But maybe you go deeper to understand, connect it with long-term care, connect it with a better understanding at hospitals, partner with healthy eating, with wellness, with clubs, try to start to track, measure. You may do it across the board, or you may become very targeted and say, let's try to help diabetic people, for example. Diabetes has its own very complicated ecosystem. Or let's just try to help certain type of illness categories. Now, most likely in this process, you will break down a very exciting 10-year vision into very, very practical steps, a whole portfolio of steps. And I think this is the really important part of the art of the strategist. Create a portfolio of initiatives, some short-term, some longer-term, some less risky, some more unfamiliar, even unknown risk categories, and make sure that you start to move towards this, because we have no idea how exactly the world will end. Nobody can give you an exact end game. We can give a North Star, and then you start to drive towards it. You want to keep your options open. And I think the real art is, can you transform your organization? So while you are maintaining and protecting your core, you are also starting to introduce new businesses, fail with many of them, close them and introduce with others, partner, try again, do an acquisition, try to do it yourself. So you consistently are reinventing your business while you are also running it. It's a big challenge, but it's extremely rewarding. And the nice thing about this is that you don't have to wait 10, 15 years and then see whether it works out, because many of these steps create a positive spiral. You will start to see some early results from just going a little bit broader in serving the customer needs and others. Then you start to see some market share increase, some improvement, maybe just lowering cost of acquisition, maybe just less churn. Then the capital markets recognize that you start to get some reward. Then you can reinvest. You bring in the best talent. They are very excited. So if you get it right, positive cycle can kick in early and can drive you. And it is extremely rewarding, but it's also very hard to do.
Got it. Just to kind of bring it back around, what I also hear is that a lot of the trends that are shifting us towards ecosystems in some parts of the economy also reduce the startup costs or the investment and risks of doing these experiments, I would think.
You are so spot on again. In fact, what we are finding that for even medium-sized or smaller companies, it is primarily not a capital or cost issue anymore. The same way as it doesn't cost too much to build a startup, even if you're a medium-sized financial institution, for example, or a medium-sized company, you can do it with relatively limited marginal investment. The challenge, though, comes from somewhere else. First and foremost, can you bring in the right type of talent? You need to probably maintain multiple cultures. Even highly agile companies don't necessarily have the type of entrepreneurial capability. Can you build the right organization? We have done some research, and what we have found that is around 80% of the ecosystems who fail to really result some impact because unfortunately not all of them succeed, so tall order. 80% of them are connected in some way to another to governance. Do you have the right structure? Can you find the so-called Goldilocks zone, not too far from the existing business so you can benefit from the scale, but not too close so that it actually kind of grinds you down? Usually you need almost like a three-speed framework. You need to have innovation lifecycle management. It's a challenge. It is rarely the money and it's rarely even the ideas, because most companies, most head of strategies have awesome cross-sectoral ideas. It is the ability to build this infrastructure behind it, which actually translates these ideas into businesses. And it's even smaller things like a culture which accepts failure. Because in your core business, you may want every single project of yours succeed, or like 95% of them. In this new world, you try and then you fail and then try again.
Yes. That comes up over and over among our listeners as a frustration and opportunity. Beautiful. I've got 15 more questions. We have 30 seconds. So I'll save those for a future opportunity, perhaps. We'll ask people to certainly buy the book, read the book, any other advice they have on how they can continue learning from you and shifting their mindset towards this ecosystem economy.
I maybe have just one advice. I have a lot of empathy for strategy people all over the world. I've spent 20 something years working with them. I think my one advice is to make sure that you invest enough time of discussing this with the management and the board. It's a complex topic. It's very, very hard to do it on the side of the desk. It's very, very hard to do it incrementally. It doesn't require a lot of capital, but it requires management attention. And that requires a strategy. Officers invest time to bring everybody along.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Miklos, for being here, for the work that you do, for taking some time to unfold it for us, and at least getting us a peek into your thinking so that we can explore it further. It was great having you on the podcast.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our producers, Karina Reyes and Zach Ness, our editor, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kaihan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week with another episode of Outthinkers.